There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Classes in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
Breaking down every game, every day in Major League Baseball, this is the Baseball Betting Show. Here is your host, Greg Peterson.
Hey, warm up from the low. Welcome to lovely Las Vegas for the Baseball Betting Show with myself, Greg Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. We've got an excellent podcast for you. Joining me in segment number two is Justin Perry, who does great work over at Pitcher's List, shot quality bets for those that love college basketball, and the Justin Perry Show. We're going to be talking about just what he's noticed here in the early part of the season, why he's not going to be overreacting to some of these guys that have had either really, really good or bad starts to the season. That includes teams as well. We're going to be taking a look at some of the pitchers that we are going to be seeing on Wednesday as well, and just some of the things in general that stood out to him to begin the season. In the final segment, going to get you guys and analysis on every game on the betting board for this Baseball Wednesday as we touch them all. If you do have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, you have one of two ways we offer those in. First one is my Twitter /xtimeline at @JDN_D1. Keep in mind the letter CM, they mean does not matter. So as per usual, please do send these into the timeline. The other way, that is find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. And then from there, you are able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. Really did not get in any Twitter/X questions today, but we had ourselves a great day of baseball on Tuesday. So let's take a look back at it, try to find some trends, and try to get to know these teams a little bit better.
A game from yesterday is Greg buzzing about. Here is the rowdy recap.
Yay, verily, to the fact that the Miami Marlins were able to cover a run line, their second of the season. Bad news, they still lose to the New York Yankees. 3-2, the finalists. AJ Puck did not necessarily give the start that the Miami Marlins were hoping for. Was able to actually mitigate the damage a little bit, but 4 2/3 innings, 5 walks allowed. And now for AJ Puck, he has won a grand total of 10 2/3 innings with 14 walks. Gave up 2 runs, one of which was earned. So once again, mitigated the damage. Alex Verdugo did take him deep for a second home run in the campaign. From there, Sixto Sanchez gives up a run in an inning. Andrew Nardi, Anthony Bender, they both lend a scoreless inning. And George Soriano, and out of the bullpen. And for the Miami Marlins, now doing the plate, they were able to put together 4 total hits as Carlos Rodon, a relatively solid start, gives up 2 unearned runs in 6 innings, hurt by an Anthony Rizzo, Gleyber Torres errors out there in the field, but Ian Hamilton, 2 scoreless innings, Clay Holmes able to lock it down for a scoreless inning and was able to get a save, and the Yankees now 10-2 to start the season. The Miami Marlins, they've got one more win than Greg Peterson, and I am not a baseball team. This one was a rough one, if you had it. The Atlanta Braves were up by a count of 6-0 going into the top of the 8th inning, and if you had the run line, that went into the abyss. 6-5, the Atlanta Braves get the outright win, but they do not cover minus a run and a half as Adrian Houser pitched a little bit more like Doogie in this one, giving up 5 runs over the course of 5 innings with no home runs allowed, but the Atlanta Braves going 7-14 with men in scoring position. And Reynaldo Lopez. A nice start from him. Six scoreless innings. Aaron Bummer, not a bummer, scoreless inning. And then you'd add Joey Jimenez, give you an out of the bullpen. But Tyler Mazick gives up three runs in two-thirds of an inning, giving up a home run to Pete Alonso, third home run of the campaign. And then Rossy Iglesias in the ninth inning, he sets fire to the run line, giving up a pair of runs in the inning. So that was a little bit less than terrific for the Braves. So they do get the outright win, and now they're your top over team in all of baseball. Seven overs, two unders, and a push for them. The Cincinnati Reds have been quite the over team as well. Eight overs to just three unders for them, and they fall to the Milwaukee Brewers 9-5, which the Brewers have now scored 8-plus runs in each of their last three games. They don't get any home runs, but they go 6-15 with men in scoring position, and Joe Ross, relatively solid start. Three runs, two of which were earned, given up in 6 3rd innings with 7 strikeouts. By the way, just his second start since the 2021 season at the big league level, and he outdueled Frankie Montas, who gave up 5 runs, 3 of which were earned in 5 innings. He did have some nice long relief, 3 runs in 4 innings surrendered by Carson Spires, and for the Cincinnati Reds, they do go just 3-15 with men in scoring position, as he had Ebner Uribe put out the fire in the ninth inning. He was able to land 3 strikeouts, as the Reds, they had men in scoring position with no outs, and they came up empty as Elvis Piguero gives up 2 runs in 1 3rd innings, and Brian Hudson, he gives you an out of the bullpen scoreless as well. Baltimore Orioles off to a relatively solid 6-4 start to the season. They take down the Boston Red Sox by a count of 7-1. Corbin Burns allows a solo home run in 7 innings as Tyler O'Neill is white hot, by the way. 6th home run of the season. I believe that that leads to big leagues. He's able to take him deep. Past that, Red Sox could get nothing generated as Jacob Webb, Danny Colomb, they both land a scoreless inning for the Orioles. No home runs, but 8-15 with men in scoring position as Brian Bayo, not a bad start here. He does give up 3 runs in 5 3rd innings, but he was hurt by a pair of errors out there in the field, just one of which was earned. Josh Winkowski was really the man that let this game go away. 4 runs, 3 of which were earned, given up in 2 2/3 innings, and Yoli Rodriguez, he was able to give you a scoreless inning out of the bullpen as well, and a team that has been able to do very well to the under thus far this season. How about the Houston Astros? They and the New York Yankees tied for the best underrated in all of baseball. 3 overs, 8 unders, and a push for both of these teams. And for the Astros, pitching was solid in this one. Bats could not get alive. 4-3. The Kansas City Royals are now 7-4. They get the win, and the Astros are now 4-8 as they got what they were looking for out of the bullpen leading up into the 10th inning as Christian Javier gives up 3 runs, 2 of which were earned in 5 1/3 innings. Not great, not terrible, but from there, Rafael Montero, he was not Rafael Montero Bull. He gives you a pair of outs out of the bullpen. Ryan Presley, Josh Hader, Brian Abreu, they all lend a scoreless inning. And then Wander, I swear, oh, this guy sucks, come into the game. And yes, that is his nickname on this podcast. Wander, I swear, oh, this guy sucks. He throws 2 pitches and he lets the game go into the abyss as you had Salvador Perez have an RBI single to be able to walk off the game. If you see Wander, I swear, oh, this guy sucks, come in for the Houston Astros, you'll probably want a live bet against him because he is not good, to say the least. But what also is not good was the Astros leaving 13 men on bases for the Royals. Cole Ragans, not the start that he was looking for. 10 hits allowed in 5 innings, gives up 3 runs. But how about the bullpen? James McArthur, 2 scoreless innings. John Schreiber, Chris Sharan, Nick Anderson, they all supply a scoreless inning of their own. The LA Dodgers just continue to be the LA Dodgers, ladies and gentlemen. They are able to win this game by multiple runs, 6-3, the final as for the LA Dodgers. They have now won 221 games since the beginning of the 2022 campaign. All but 35 of them have been by multiple runs. As for Los Angeles, Tyler Glasnow was tremendous. 14 punchouts and 7 scoreless innings. From there, things got a little bit airy. Connor Brogdon gives up a pair of solo home runs in his inning of work, and Alex Vesey a lot of solo home run as well. For Minnesota, they had 3 home runs going into the bottom of the 8th inning all season. Then they provide 3 home runs as Ryan Jeffries gets his second of the campaign. Alex Kirilloff, Carlos Correa, they both get their first. And for Louis Varland, he allowed a pair of home runs himself. 6 runs surrendered in 5 innings. Will Smith gets jiggy with it for his first home run of the campaign. And James Altman, he goes out, man. Second home run of the season. From there, Cole Sands, 2 scoreless innings. Brock Stewart, Jorge Alcala, both lend a scoreless inning for the Seattle Mariners. They are unable to lend enough offense to be able to get the job done in this one. 5-3, the Toronto Blue Jays get the win as George Kirby, second straight rough start for him, gives up 5 runs in 4-plus innings as he, in his previous start, went 3 2/3, giving up 8 runs, 6 of which were earned, giving up to the Guardians. So, been a rough start to the season for him. Bullpen from there wasn't too bad. Trent Thornton, Gabe Spire, Austin Voth, they all lend a scoreless inning, and then Ryan Stanek, along with Brett DeGuise, they combine for a scoreless inning. And for the Seattle Mariners, pair of home runs in this one. Dom Canzone, his third home run campaign off of Chris Bassett, and then Trevor Richards gives one up to Mitch Haniger, his second for Bassett. Good start here. does allow that home run, but that's all that he allowed. Solo home run in 6 2/3 innings. Despite giving up 4 walks, Trevor Richards, he gives up 2 runs in an inning from there, but Chad Green gets the final 4 outs of the game to be able to go scoreless. And for the Blue Jays, after scoring 3 runs or fewer in 7 out of their previous 9 games, 5-plus in each of their last 2. So they're starting to get online a little bit more. Also getting online, how about the Detroit Tigers? 5-3, they take down the Pittsburgh Pirates. Just a third loss of the season for the Pirates, as they did have Ed Olivares be the main form of offense in this one. He's able to go deep twice for his second and third home runs of the campaign. Goes deep off of Casey Mize, the starter, who he goes 5 innings, giving up 2 runs in this one. And then Tyler Holton gives up a solo home run in his inning of work, but you had from there Shelby Miller, Jason Foley, Alex Lang all lend a scoreless inning. And for the Tigers, they go 4 of 10 with men in scoring position. They do a nice job being able to get to the bullpen, as Martin Perez, actually a really good start. He gives up 1 run in 8 innings, and then David Benar, one of the better relievers out there in the big leagues, he completely lights this game on fire. 4 runs given up in a third of an inning before Rolonzi Contreras has to get the final 2 outs of that ninth inning, as the Pirates entered in the ninth inning up by a count of 3-1, and then they made like your buddy at the bar and could not close. And for the Cleveland Guardians, they allow the Chicago White Sox to get their second win of the year, 7-5 the final. The White Sox currently deal with Eloy Jimenez being out of the fold along with Luis Robert, but you know what they had in this game? They had themselves Kevin Pillar give you a multiple RBI, as it was enough in support of Mike Soroka. Did not give a great start. 4 runs surrendered in 3 2/3 innings. He did give up a home run along the way to Josh Naylor, his second home run of the campaign, but Logan Allen was worse, giving up 5 runs over the course of 4 innings. From there, the Guardians' bullpen stabilized. Nick Sandlin, Hunter Gaddis, Eli Morgan, Peter Strzelecki all end a scoreless inning, but Scott Barlow, rough start to the season for him. 2 runs surrendered over the course of an inning. And for the White Sox, bullpen was solid. Michael Kopech and Joey Leisurely both give you 2 scoreless innings apiece. Steven Wilson, he gives you a scoreless inning, and Tim Hill allowed a run while getting it out of the bullpen as well. But yay verily for a White Sox win, and yay verily to the Chicago Cubs, who they get a 5-1 win over the Padres, who are scuffling a little bit, 6-8 to begin the season. But for the Chicago Cubs, pair of home runs off of Joe Musgrove, as for Yan Gomes, he gets his first home run of the season. Then Christopher Morel, same inning, gets his third, though that was actually off of the reliever and Stephen Kolick, who gave up that solo home run in 2 innings of work for Musgrove. Not a good start here. 4 runs given up in 4 innings. He's been not great, to say the least, to begin the season. Good news is Johnny Brito entered this game with a ERA above 9. It's now at an 8-1 as he goes for 2 scoreless innings. Tom Cosgrove, a scoreless inning of his own. And for the Padres, the lone form of offense in this one was being able to get home run number 2 of the season from their young guy, Eugay Rosario. Hopefully I said that correctly. He goes deep in this one off of Drew Smyly, who he came in after Ben Brown threw 4 2/3 innings scoreless. Good start there. Drew Smyly gives out that solo home run in 1 3rd innings, but Mark Leiter Jr., Adbert Alsley, Yancy Almonte, they are all able to lend a scoreless inning. In the Tampa Bay Rays, they lend themselves a win 6-4 over the LA Angels. As for the Halos, Mike Trout goes deep once again. He has been tremendous to start the season, as he's up to home run number 6 of the season. That's tied for the big league lead. He was able to go deep off of Aaron Savali. He gives up 3 runs, 2 of which earned in the course of 5 innings. Bullpen from there was solid. Pete Fairbanks allows a run in an inning, but Jason Adam, Phil Maton, Colin Pouchet, they're all able to supply a scoreless inning. Angels, by the way, now 7 overs to 4 unders this far this season. As a race, they go 4 of 8 with men in scoring position, and Isak Paredes is able to go deep. Home run number 4 of the campaign. That comes off of Jose Cicerano, who gives up a run in an inning, but Patrick Sandoval, he gives up 4 runs over the course of 5 innings. Walk 3. Luis Garcia, Carson Fulmer, they both land a scoreless inning, but Hunter Strickland, yes, he is still pitching at the big league level. No idea how he was able to come in. He gave up a run in an inning himself. The Washington Nationals had to scratch Josiah Gray just before his start against the San Francisco Giants, and Yoan Adone leads them to victory, 5-3 the final. It has been rough for the San Francisco Giants on offense this season, as Adone, he goes 4 innings, he walks 3, gives up 1 run, but the bullpen at his back. Robert Garcia, Dylan Floro both provide a scoreless inning. Kyle Finnegan, Hunter Harvey, they combine for 2 scoreless, and Jordan Weems, he gives up 2 runs, 1 of which was earned in his inning of work, but CJ Abrams, he provided the boom. 3rd home run season, that comes off of Kyle Harrison, who gives up 3 runs over the course of 6 innings. From there, Ryan Walker gives up a run in an inning, and then you had Rogers squared as Taylor Rogers, a pair of outs out of the bullpen scoreless. His brother, Tyler, he gives up a run in his 1 1/3 innings, but for the Giants, they strand 11 men on base in this one. And speaking of stranding men on base, our DK Network write-up of the over in the Cardinals versus Phillies, as I did. I had an edge on the Cardinals money line. I should have written that up, as well as the Cardinals win 3-0. As for the Philadelphia Phillies, they leave 8 men on base, and the bases loaded in the 7th inning with 1 out, and they did nothing with it, as for both of these teams to combine 0 of 15 with men in scoring position, so a little bit salty about that. Zach Wheelan and Dylan Wheeler, well, he wasn't really Wheelan and Dylan, gives up 3 runs over the course of 7 innings, not terrible, not great, gives up a home run to Nolan Gorman, 3rd home run season, and for Sonny Gray, he was on a tight pitch count, only goes 64 pitches, but 5 punchouts, 5 scoreless innings from him. Matthew Liberatore, Andrew Kittredge, they both give you a pair of outs out of the bullpen before JoJo Romero gives you 1 2/3 innings scoreless with 4 punchouts, and Ryan Helsley a scoreless inning as the Philadelphia Phillies as well ground into 3 double plays. That was a little bit less than ideal, and if you took the over in Colorado, this was less than ideal. Not a lot of runs in this game. Arizona, they get their first road win of the season, 3-2. They take down the Colorado Rockies. Randall Grichuk, Corbin Carroll, they both good deep off of Cal Quantrill. He was rough early, but settled down, gave you 6 innings, giving up 3 runs. From there, Victor Vodnik, Jalen Beeks, Tyler Kinley, they all end a scoreless inning, but for the Rockies, they had a rough time trying to get to Merrill Kelly. Gives up 2 runs over the course of 6 innings. From there, Ryan Thompson, Kyle Nelson, they both combined for 2 scoreless innings, and Kevin Ginkle scoreless inning. And I know that Jared Smith, who joined this show a day or two ago, he was talking about the yes run first inning in the Rockies. That cashed once again on Tuesday, and he had 3 runs scored in the first inning in Coors and 2 runs the rest of the game. So a little bit of a funky one out there. And the Oakland A's, 7-1 on the run line in their last 8 games. They win for the 3rd straight game outright, 4-3 the final. As for the Texas Rangers, Anthony Eovaldi, good start here, gives up a solo run in 5 2/3 innings, but it was a Shea Legolera's night. He goes deep 3 times, goes deep off of Eovaldi, goes deep off of David Robertson, and then goes deep off of Jose Leclerc. Home run 2, 3, and 4 of the campaign. Robertson gives up that solo run in 1 1/3 innings, and then Jose Leclerc, he blows the game in the 9th, giving up a 2-run shot to Langoliers in his inning of work. Kirby Yates, scoreless inning as well, and for the Rangers, they had a pair of solo runs. Eli Carter, first home run of the campaign, and Jonah Heim is first. Heim goes deep off of Alex Wood, and for Wood, gives up 2 runs over the course of 4 innings. The other home run, that comes off of Mitch Spence, who gave up his home run in 3 innings of work, but from there, you had Michael Kelly and Mason Miller come in. They were able to provide spotless 8th and 9th innings to be able to get the job done out there, and also being able to get the job done is over thus far this baseball season, as it continues to be a little bit of an overwhelming start to the season. Overs for the campaign, hitting at 54.7%, 82 overs, 68 unders. Along the way, we have seen quite a few pushes as well. I think that we're up to 10 in total. Favorites on the money line, they're cashing at about 58.7%, 91 and 64, and road teams just continue to be hot. 84 and 74 straight up. If you take a look at what we just got on Tuesday, it was very much an underwhelming day. 9 unders are just 5 overs with a push along the way, and favorites yesterday, they went just 7 and 8 straight up, so very much a day for the dogs, as that's what we saw in baseball on Tuesday, and that's what we're getting trend-wise in this great game. Coming up next, we'll be taking a look at Wednesday with our good friend in Justin Perry. He does great work with the Justin Perry Show along with Pitcher List. We're going to be diving in on some prospects that he's taking a look at as well, what he's made out of the front half of the season as well, and so much more. That's up next right here on the Baseball Betting Show with myself, Greg Peterson, now a part of the VSiN Family Podcast.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Breaking down every game, every day in Major League Baseball. This is the Baseball Betting Show. Here is your host, Greg Peterson.
And we're back here in lovely Las Vegas for the Baseball Betting Show with myself, Greg Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. And it is always a joy to be joined by this man, as Justin Perry. He does absolutely excellent work over at Shot Quality Bets, but coupled with that, he has launched a new show called The Justin Perry Show. He does a tremendous job looking at a little bit of everything. Football, basketball, baseball, you name it, he does it. He's also contributing this year on the baseball front over at PitcherList as well. And you're able to follow him on Twitter /X over at Justin Perry, the number 8. So his first and last name, and that last name spelled P-E-R-R-I. And Justin, it is always a joy to get you on, my friend. Thank you.
Greg, super excited to be here. Baseball time is truly upon us with the college basketball championship and season behind us in the rearview mirror now. Really excited to get into some awesome baseball work. Actually just published one of my first deep dives into the prospect systems of the NL West over at PitcherList. So if you're interested in that type of stuff, playing some deep dynasty leagues, you know, we're going to have some fun, you know, at that deeper level this season in baseball, so that you know the guys before anyone else.
Absolutely. And Justin, you do such a great job of taking a look at some of these guys that might not be stars right now, but they might be household names by the end of the season / early into next year. They're the guys that grow on us as things go along. And just in terms of your research over at PitcherList, are there a few guys that you have been unearthing that are a little bit under the radar that you think by season's end, we're going to be looking at them at higher esteem than we are right now?
You know, I think there's a couple guys I'm sort of tasked over there with the NL West. The easy ones I'm excited for, you know, to see Jackson Holliday and Paul Skenes come up for sure. Junior Caminero kind of talked about a little bit more. There's clearly some need for the Rays at shortstop, but I think they view him a little bit more as a third baseman. There's some really great talent coming along, but one that stood out in the NL West for me, Greg, was Jordan Lawler. He's been amazing his whole career. I think it's going to be very exciting to see him translate into the major leagues. He's a great young player. There's a lot of competition, of course, with Geraldo Perdomo, this Lawler's Diamondbacks prospect. So it's going to be pretty interesting to see how that all comes together for that battle. But I could see Lawler being a part of the big club by the season ends. When the roster starts expanding, that's someone definitely to know about for the Arizona Diamondbacks. I mean, a fun one for sure. And then the other good one I thought was Josu DePaula, who was actually training this summer with Juan Soto and Ellie De La Cruz. He's 18 years old, so a little bit further away. But if you want that deeper type of stash, that younger type of guy, he should be pretty nice. And he's coming up right now with the Dodgers, so it's a good system, and he could end up doing some damage in a year or two.
Oh, absolutely. That Dodger system that was able to help out Bobby Miller last year. Ryan Pepiot was a part of that a few seasons ago, and he just had an amazing start out there with the Tampa Bay Rays. So the Dodgers, they know what the heck they are doing with regards to pitching prospects. So I do like that look as well, and I always do think that it is fun to be able to take a look at some of those younger pitchers, be able to find a little bit of upside. And there are just certain systems, in my opinion, that do a better job than others. And just taking a look at the board that we do have for Wednesday, we do have quite a few of the top flight starters that are going. But how about if we do take a look at one of those younger guys? That'd be Hunter Green. Green and the Cincinnati Reds, they are going to be facing off against the Brewers. Currently no numbers up on this game just because the Brewers, we didn't know that they were going to be throwing Wade Miley or not, but I'd have to think that the Reds, when this opens up, are going to be a little bit of a favorite. But how do you take a look at this sort of a matchup? And Hunter Green in general, who's had his struggles at home the first 2 years at the big league level, but I feel like your number three could be a bust out for him.
I actually like Hunter Green a good amount. I think the Reds team does have a decent eye, obviously not the biggest sample size yet. We've seen him pitch against the Nats and the Mets. So maybe take things a little bit of a grain of salt here. You know, 13 strikeouts so far and a little bit under 11 innings right now. Fastball velocity is there. And at the end of the day, to me, that's what's always going to set apart pitchers. You need to be able to get that velocity. We're seeing it's a little difficult right now. But yeah, I mean, Green's fastball sits at 98. He throws harder than most guys. And I think that will continue to challenge teams. Brewers should have a little bit of a difficult time. You definitely want to catch a little bit of the weather for sure. The difficulty, of course, is that when he does get barreled up, it isn't that pretty. He has avoided hard hits so far. But again, what are you really comparing to? Because it's the Mets and the Nationals who aren't exactly stellar at that. We'll see how it goes. The fastball, though it has the speed, can kind of sit over the middle. So we'll see how Green can play. Assuming it's Miley, he's not going to really incur too many strikeouts, which I think is going to be a problem here. He's a location guy. He's not like a swing and miss type of guy. So I'm a little bit worried about him at Great American Ballpark for sure. So I'd be leaning definitely towards maybe an over and likely towards the Reds here.
Yep, I'm right there with you. And for the Milwaukee Brewers, been a little bit pleasantly surprised by them thus far this season. I feel like that might be a little bit of fool's gold, though. We're about 2 weeks through the season, and as you were alluding to, you were mentioning the phrase, taking things with a grain of salt, and I wholeheartedly agree with you at this part of the season. But has there been anything that you've seen in the first 2 weeks of the season that you're saying you're like, yeah, maybe the Pirates aren't going to continue to win like 80% of their games or anything like that, but hey, maybe this has a little bit more staying power than maybe you thought towards the beginning part of the season.
I'm definitely seeing a little bit of maybe some hesitancy in the betting markets to be confident in the best teams. You know, like something that comes to mind is like the Yankees being minus 150 against the Marlins in Monday, right? And it's like, you know, minus 160. I don't know. I was big on the Yankees in that game, and maybe that's a little hometown bias, but I think you'd have to just have some confidence here in some of these good teams. You definitely want to make sure that you're not overreacting. You know, Nestor Cortez was pitching in that one, so you're likely getting a discount. And I think you want to zig when people zag. You want to, you know, assume if a guy, unless there's a true mechanical difference and, you know, you see something, I think watching the games right now can give you a big edge in terms of like actually seeing how pitchers are looking early in the season and then like getting a sense of, okay, if this guy comes out actually throwing that fastball well, how's he going to do for a day? You know, I think there's very clearly been days where guys are on or off. And that's a big part of baseball betting is that, you know, usually when you take a side, or I play a lot of first fives, but when you play on a pitcher or you fade a pitcher, usually you're going to be right or wrong. There's a polar result. So, you know, early in the season, I wouldn't doubt process. I wouldn't get too worried, you know, seeing expected bad pitcher have like a good start out the gate. You know, like a Jack Flaherty for the Tigers is a beautiful first start. And then what? You're just going to trust him and then he blows it against the A's of all teams, right? So you definitely don't want to ascribe performance based on one or two starts. I think you want to look at the larger body of work for pitchers to try to understand who they've been. And I'm still definitely seeing a little bit more correlation with last year's results than, you know, one or two game samples for sure. And I think we'll continue to see that this week. It's happened year in and year out. You need to give credit to the last year's lineup and last year's results because, you know, not too many lineups are that vastly different. There's been some movement, but you know, how much is really changing across the league? It's not that crazy.
Yep, I agree with you. I think that that's a very good way of being able to go about things. And I do think that one team that has been able to fortify their lineup quite a bit, and it makes sense, that would be the New York Yankees. If you are looking at a lineup that, hey, perhaps they have had quite a bit of a quantum shift that is the New York Yankees, just because, in my opinion, you bring in someone like a Juan Soto that is going to be able to help you out, and they were just mired in injuries last year. It's not even funny, and now they get to go up against Ryan Weathers, who, if you look at his career numbers, not great to say the least, going up against Marcus Stroman of the New York Yankees. I've been personally looking at things here in the beginning part of the season, and I don't want to make too many rash overreactions, but I'm just looking at this Miami Marlins team, and until they get their starters off the injury list and Yuri Perez is done for the season, I feel like this is a big giant fade moving forward. I'm not sure how you look at this Yankees team with them being right around about a minus $2 favorite, but I am more than inclined to be able to take a look at the Yankees on a rather even money slash minus 105 run line and feel pretty good about it.
I might sleep well with the minus 200, Greg. Tell you the dang truth. I mean, yeah, Stroman had really great control. I think he's the type of guy that induces a lot of ground balls and allows that defense to play well behind him. And the defense is looking pretty good for the Yankees. I'm pretty excited about that, honestly. So we'll see. You know, they might drop a game in this series, but I doubt it. I've just been really impressed with what we've been seeing out of them. I mean, Oswaldo Cabrera in and out of the lineup, but Volpe, Stanton's contributing. You know, obviously the strikeout percentage is disgusting for Giancarlo Stanton, but you know what you're getting. It's not really worth him swinging the bat to try to make light contact. That's just not who he is. The exit velocities are still there for him, which is great, but Soto is a monster. Judge isn't even playing that well right now. His expected batting average is low, but he's crushing the ball when he's making contact. So if you start seeing the ball a little bit better, instead of maybe, my guess is like guessing right on a few pitches, working a lot of walks to increase his wOBA, you know, still very valuable batter, even if he's not making a lot of contact. You know, yeah, the walk percentage is really high. So the ceiling is ridiculous here for the New York Yankees. And I think you can probably feel pretty good about them. Rizzo maybe starting to contribute to this lineup pretty up and down, as long as they stay healthy, will be good.
Yep, I think so as well. And I just take a look at this entire New York Yankees team, and I do think that there's quite a bit of upside with them as compared to last year. As last year, I just don't think was a fair representation of them with all the injuries and Anthony Volpe being able to step up so big for them as well. As Justin Perry does tremendous work over at Pitcher Liz, along with the Justin Perry Show, is joining me right here on the Baseball Betting Show. And I did mention the Marlins as a pretty big fade, and I know that you were mentioning this a little bit before as well, talking about some of these better teams maybe being a little bit short on the line. How have you been looking at some of these teams that are, and I quote here, fades? Because we've actually noticed the Oakland A's be relatively solid on the run line thus far, and the Rockies have won a few games as well, but I look at them moving forward as being a fade. I just talked about the Miami Marlins, and I think that until this team gets healthy, they are going to stink on ice. But how are you gaining more of these, and I air quotes here, bad teams? Because I do think that there's quite a bit of money early on in the season in terms of fading some of these lesser teams, because you're able to get shorter numbers than you will be in, say, July, August, when you get those minus $3 lines.
Yeah, I mean, look, in regards to like the A's, I mean, they beat the Tigers twice and they covered the third game there. And I think it just speaks to the Tigers being another bad team. The A's, they can take that with a grain of salt. I think you worried a little bit about the Red Sox at times for sure. They didn't cover the last two games of that series, even though they did win all three games. So like to the Red Sox, they don't care about covering. So I've always hesitated with favorite run lines, unless you're very confident in the matchup. And I think that's a lesson there, especially with midline. I mean, the Red Sox are going to be last in the AL East, most likely. So I'm not taking Red Sox money lines. So again, Red Sox and Tigers, Guardians dropped that one game at the end if they won the first three of the series. Yeah, I still think you fade Oakland. I think Seattle's looking a little weak for sure as well, which I think is a little surprising. They're having some trouble getting it together. You know, when they run in, when you get a Seattle team running into like a team that looks good, like the Orioles, or even when the Rays maybe start to figure it out, or the Brewers, or the Padres, or the Dodgers, like, you know, these top tier teams that have the pitching and the hitting. I mean, look, it's early season. There's some messiness in the standings. You really can't take too much from it. You need to give things a couple weeks to even out for everybody to play a good team, a bad team, middle team, to start to separate from the pack and understand who's going where. So you can kind of dig into the standings and find like those fake records a little bit, the ones that maybe point the wrong way about a team, like Minnesota Twins sitting 3-5 right now, while the Tigers are 7-4. Are you going to get maybe too good of a price on the Tigers? Maybe. Maybe you should be fading the Tigers right now at 7-4, expecting that to regress a little bit. All that's going to happen. And all that, the leans on those pricings and recency biases are all out there. So I would just stick to your guns. You know, don't get caught up with, oh, Oakland's covered this as a reason to just bet Oakland, and they're going to go into a tough series right now that I could imagine against the Rangers. They don't cover a single one, or even worse, you're going to be betting plus minus 2.5 on the Rangers to even get them. So, like, there's always money to be made betting bad teams. But at the other end, like, I think when you have a good matchup and you have a good pitcher that should be taking care of business, for me especially, I love to isolate the first five innings and really target starters and kind of try to leave some of that bullpen craziness out of it, because it takes a lot to handicap bullpens. You know exactly who went the night before and the night before that, and who threw how many pitches and who they might use. It's still a variable at the end of the game. I love my first fives for that reason alone.
That can be a very good way to be able to go about things as well. And there's a lot of ways to be able to slice it. There's a lot of ways to be able to dice it. But at the end of the day, it's all about gauging the situation itself as well, because there are some of these teams that are absolutely awful. Like, you may recall the Diamondbacks when they were just so horrible in that 2021 campaign. But Merrill Kelly, every time he took the mound for them, was halfway decent. So I always do think that those are the sorts of things that you do want to be taking a look at, as well as Justin Perry, who does an amazing job taking a look at the great game of baseball, is joining me right here on the Baseball Betting Show. And do want to open this up to you a little bit more as well, because I know that there's quite a few games that we've got for this Wednesday. We've got 14 in total, so all but two teams are going to be in action. Anything for you that's really catching your eye when it comes to this Wednesday card, whether that be a game that you're going to be looking to bet, or maybe it's not even a game that you're looking to bet, but you're a little bit jury's out on a certain pitcher or a certain team?
Yeah, honestly, Wednesday's card has a lot of pitchers I'm pretty far out on. Patrick Corbin's going. That's always a fun one to be aware of. I'm a little worried about Jose Quintana playing the Braves for sure. Lance Lynn's pitching as well. There's a lot of pitchers I'm probably going to be looking to fade. I expect some runs. Austin Gomber's going. That Arizona game is going to be, I believe, Gomber pitching against Tommy Henry. So, like, could see if it's decent weather in Colorado, that could be an over spot for sure. You know, some of the good pitchers that are playing, I'm excited to see how Logan Gilbert performs. Been excited to watch Dylan Cease in the new uniform. Should be an interesting spot against the Cubs. And like you said, Marcus Stroman should probably do well. Jordan Hicks against the Nats should do pretty well. It should be a fun day. I would look at an under maybe for that Toronto-Seattle game. Expect Kikuchi to continue to pitch pretty well. He's looked good. Maybe an over for the Royals game, perhaps, I think, as well. That's an interesting one there, but it'd be a little bit of a tough spot for sure. Hunter Brown, a little tough. And Houston, they're going to get it going. So I would look maybe for that game to be a potential over spot. And I would, you know, make sure you take a look at weather, which is something that I usually look at the morning of, right before I make my plays, because you want to make sure all that's good. If you're really cautious, maybe waiting for lineups as well.
Absolutely, and you do bring up something with the Colorado Rockies and Arizona Diamondbacks game, taking a look at the over, and entering into the day on Tuesday, we had noticed north of 55 games have gone over the total. What have you made out of this? Because we know that there's been a lot of pitching injuries. We know that just in general, the rule changes has allowed for a little bit more run scoring. And typically, in most years, we've been noticing that the pitchers have been in front of the hitters. But ever since the rule changes, we have been noticing that offenses have been hot to start out the year the last few years. And I don't think that that's overly much of a coincidence.
No, I don't think it's much of a coincidence either. We have a lot of reasons to believe that these rotations, pitchers aren't fully stretched out, potentially. Bullpens may be struggling with injuries. There's been a lot of injuries, right? And I think, you know, the back end of rotations aren't as strong, and that can send ripples throughout the entire, throughout teams in general, right? Like, when you don't have guys eating as many innings, when your starters have less innings, but your bullpens are working more, and that can start early if there's injuries. You know, you can start to see that, especially if guys can't settle in to a season on regular rest. In the bullpen, we've seen plenty of, you know, crooked numbers in late innings. So I definitely think you can continue to stay on overs in terms of, like, full games. You can definitely find first five unders in good pitching matchups to stay under with. But with how bullpen quality's been and injuries, you know, Nick Pivetta, elbow soreness now, seems like every day it's just getting thinner, and that's going to benefit hitters long-term in offenses.
Yep, it is certainly going to benefit hitters long-term, and something that benefits this show is being able to get you aboard, my friend. Justin, you do such a great job taking a look at this great game that we all know and love of baseball, so let the good people know what's all on tap for you and how people can follow along on social media and other platforms.
Yeah, definitely check out my Twitter. I post everything I do there, at JustinPerry8, P-E-R-R-I is how you spell the last name, and we're going to be doing some good stuff. Still shock quality with the NBA season. We got a lot of NBA playoffs still to go, so plenty to discuss there in basketball. Baseball season, of course, just getting started up, working with Pitcher List to do a couple articles every single week. So again, everything we posted to Twitter, make sure you follow Pitcher List, because there's just a wealth of baseball knowledge, some of the best pitching resources, honestly, in baseball analytics. You know, a lot of good fantasy research and breakdowns of starts and how guys are looking. It's a really good network of writers, so definitely worth checking out if you've never heard of it. And, you know, this is actually my second stint writing there. I don't know if you know that, Greg. I wrote
yes.
The Pitcher List right out of college in 2018. One of the first writers. I did reliever rankings, doing a little bit of that as well. So it's a really great site. It helps me stay sharp on baseball, and, you know, you can use that however you want. I use it for a little betting, a little fantasy, but there are few better resources. It's right up there with, like, Fan Graphs and Savant and all that stuff that you kind of need to have in your arsenal.
Yep, and we certainly need to have in our guest arsenal the one and only Justin Perry, because he does absolutely excellent work taking a look at this great game of baseball that we all know and love. It is always great to be able to get him aboard. Big thanks to Justin for joining me on the Baseball Betting Show, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. And coming up next, it is that time of the podcast to give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this Baseball Wednesday as we touch them all.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
I bet you're smart.
Yeah, and you like to hold your own in the group chat.
We can help you drop even more knowledge. My name is Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Izadi. We host a daily news podcast called Post Reports.
Every weekday afternoon, Post Reports takes you inside an important and interesting story with the kind of reporting that you can only get from The Washington Post.
You can listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. Go find it now and hit follow.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel... It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Breaking down every game, every day in Major League Baseball, this is the Baseball Betting Show. Here is your host, Greg Peterson.
And we're back in lovely Las Vegas for the Baseball Betting Show with myself, Greg Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. Always great to be joined by Justin Perry. He does absolutely tremendous work over at Pitcherless, the Justin Perry Show. For those looking on the basketball front, shot quality bets, and so much more. Every single time he joins the show, he lends such good insights and did so once again today. So big thanks to him for joining me in the last segment. Now it is that time of the podcast to give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this Baseball Wednesday as we touch them all.
If a game is listed on the betting board, Greg has a side and a total on it, so it is time to touch them all.
Do note that as per usual, any changes that are made to these plays will be listed up on my Twitter /X feed at @GNN_D1. Going to be going in Las Vegas rotation order. This is where we go with the National League games first, then the American League games, and any interleague games. Those are going to be at the bottom. That'll keep things all nice, neat, clean, and easy. So let's get things started with this first National League game of 9:51-9:52 on the card. The Philadelphia Phillies are on the road facing off against the St. Louis Cardinals. Lance Lynn goes for the Cards, and it is Aaron Nola looking to be super for the Philadelphia Phillies. The Phillies are finding themselves as anywhere between -128 to -135 favorites. Anywhere between +114 to +120 is that number on St. Louis. 8 to 8.5 is the total on the 8. The over is -115. The under is -105 on the 8.5. The under is -115 and the over is -105. And circumstance where I'm going to be looking at the over. Got burnt with it with my write-up yesterday because the two teams went and combined 0-for-15 with men in scoring position. With these two guys on the mound, I think we should be a little bit more fortunate there with Lance Lynn. Has just been getting banged around like a pinata since the beginning of the 2022 season, giving up 1.9 home runs per 9 innings at well north of a 5 ERA last season. And it doesn't matter the change of scenery. He got banged around with the LA Dodgers. He got banged around while he was with the Chicago White Sox. This guy has just been giving up home run after home run in every ballpark in America. So that's not great to say the least. Meanwhile, Aaron Nola, he's been giving up since the beginning part of the 2023 season, right around a home run and a half per 9 innings in his ERA. Hovering right around a 4-5, the fielding independent is a little bit better. He's still getting a little bit north of 9 strikeouts per 9 innings. And on the flip side of that as well, Lance Lynn still getting a few swings and misses as well. But with the Phillies, I did set them in this ordeal at a -128, so -128 or less. That is my buy point on them with the Philadelphia Phillies. The bullpen, it is a little bit of a roll the dice at this point. Jose Alvarado, Sir Anthony Dominguez, they have not looked like himself, but that said, the only relief piece that they needed to use yesterday was Wander Ricardo Pinto, so they've got most of their main guys out there. Matt Strom is able to give you a little bit of length as well, and then for the St. Louis Cardinals, they did have to use up Ryan Helsley yesterday, and it's just not a bullpen I trust, as Helsley is the only guy that returns from last year with a sub-3.5 ERA. The guys like Jojo Romero, Ryan Tepera, I just don't have a lot of faith in them. You have had Andrew Kittredge be a nice offseason signing, so you do like to see that. I do think that the Cardinals are going to be able to get in line a little bit more as well. It's been a rough start to the season for the Stars on really both sides. Bryce Harper had that 3-home-run game, but other than that, he's been about as useful as a poopy-flavored lollipop. Bryson Stott, Alec Bohm, Kyle Schwarber, Nick Castellanos, all ending about a 237 or lower, not really giving you a lot of pop. And then Paul Goldschmidt hitting below the Mendoza line of 200 for the St. Louis Cardinals. You know that that's going to be rising up. Nolan Gorman, he goes deep for his third home run yesterday, but hasn't necessarily been able to move the line. Brendan Donovan, he hits a whole heck of a lot better when he's at home rather than on the road. Mason Wynn has actually been able to do a solid job of getting on base for the Cardinals, but you've got a lot of other younger guys that just have not been able to step up yet. Haven't gotten anything out of Victor Scott. I do think that that is going to be turning around here as Aaron Nola. I do think that we need to put him on blast for the fact that he just has not been pitching well over the last 12 months in general, but I'm still going to take him over Lance Lynn in this spot. Semi-line at minus 128, so minus 128 or less. Looking at the Phillies on the money line, semi-total at 9.2, so I also like the over. 953, 954 on the betting board. The Arizona Diamondbacks are on the road facing off against the Colorado Rockies. Austin Gomber looks to not get gombered up by the Arizona Diamondbacks. Meanwhile, Tommy Henry is on the bump for Arizona. Minus 133 to minus 142. The number on the Snakes anywhere between plus 118 to plus 125 is that number on Colorado. 12.5 is the total over and under, both at minus 110 and semi-total 12.8. I do like the over. Tommy Henry has never really been able to find it as a professional pitcher, and for Austin Gomber since the beginning of the 2023 season at home, now I recognize that it's Coors Field, but in his home starts, ERA north of 7. Not great to say the least. And then for Tommy Henry, it's been all sorts of issues for him as well at home, on the road, no matter where it's been. As last season, he got just 6.5 strikeouts to 3.5 walks per 9 innings. He's currently posting up a fielding independent for his career of a 5.26, which is actually higher than his 4.72 ERA. So he's lucky to have a 4.72 ERA. Has given up the deep ball throughout his career. 1.5 home runs per 9 innings surrendered. Was a little bit better last year at mitigating hard contact, but haven't seen what I've liked out of him. And for Austin Gomber, again, this guy has just been rough to say the least, as he's a pitch contact guy that gives up way too much hard contact. He, in a Colorado Rockies uniform, has been allowing well north of 1.7 home runs per 9 innings. Last year, he got just 5.6 punch outs per 9 innings, and he is backed up by a bullpen that is absolutely terrible. Victor Vodnik is right now one of your more trustworthy relievers for the Colorado Rockies. Justin Lawrence has been absolutely terrible. You've had a lot of guys just not be able to step up, like Peter Lambert, who they're now converting into a relief pitcher. Nick Mears, someone who's relatively okay, but I do have more faith in the Arizona Diamondbacks bullpen, even with Luis Frias, along with Miguel Castro, not necessarily being the world's greatest, but Joe Mantiply, I do think, is going to be able to return to form a little bit more, and Scott McGough was legitimately one of the more unlucky relievers in all baseball last season, and for the Arizona Diamondbacks, I do like the way that this offense is able to function. Finally got their first road win of the season last night, and you've got Jock Peterson, who's been a good pickup. He hasn't been utilized too much by this team, but he's supplying well north of a 4 on base. You've got to figure that Corbin Carroll going to be able to get his act together a little bit more. Finally got his first home run of the season yesterday. You've got so many guys that are doing a nice job moving the line, like Christian Walker and Eugenio Suarez, with Walker already supplying 3 home runs. Ketel Marte got the day off yesterday. Should be back in the fold here. And for the Colorado Rockies, you have a team that just always hits so much better at home rather than away from home. Last year, made about 40 points higher with their batting average at home rather than away from home. 5.35 runs per game at home. 3.65 runs per game away from home. And right now, you've got Elias Diaz, Ryan McMahon, Charlie Blackman, Ezekiel Tovar, all hitting at least at 300. Now, Chris Bryant has been a waste of money, and Nolan Jones, after he showed upside last season, has not been able to give you too much, but you do have some encouraging signs there. And going against Tommy Henry, the Rockies should be able to get their runs, but at the same time, I do think that the Diamondbacks, like Gomber and this bullpen ablaze, I set my total at a 12.8. I like the over. If you're looking at the run line of the Arizona Diamondbacks, you're getting that at only right around about a plus 105. This is a strange circumstance where I would rather take the money line at a minus 133. We saw them play a one-run game yesterday. If you're going to lay a run and a half, I just need a little bit more than a plus 105 here. So I'm sticking with the money line in this spot with the Arizona Diamondbacks, as I don't trust in Tommy Henry to be able to lead you to a multi-run one-run win. So looking at the money line and the over in this ordeal, looking at the Diamondbacks on that money line. 955, 956 on the betting board. The Washington Nationals are on the road facing off against the San Francisco Giants. Jordan X goes for the Giants. Patrick Corbin is on the bump for the Nationals. And the Nationals, shocker, are an underdog. You're going to be finding them in between plus 160 to plus 172. Meanwhile, between minus 185 to minus 195. That number on San Francisco, 8 to 8.5 is the total. On the 8, over is between minus 115 to a minus 120. The under is between even a minus 105 on the 8.5. Under is minus 120. The over is even. And I did somebody told on an 8.8. I'm going to be looking at the over. You've got a guy, Patrick Corbin, that has been one of the biggest fades in pretty much gambling X. And that's for a good reason. For Patrick Corbin, last few seasons has had well north of a 5 ERA. Actually, if you've bet on Patrick Corbin the last 2 years, since the beginning of the 2023 campaign, it hasn't been too bad. I believe that the team is like 16 and 18 in his starts. It's not because Patrick Corbin has pitched well, though. Like, even this season, 8 strikeouts and 4 walks in 10 and a third innings. He's not been the world's worst pitcher, but man, he is not great to say the least. And Jordan Hicks has looked relatively good as a starter. 2 runs, one of which earned in his first 2 starts, leading to a pair of wins against the San Diego Padres. And now they go up against the Washington Nationals lineup that is a bit revamped from last season. They do bring in some power with Eddie Rosario, Jesse Winker, along with Joey Gallo entering into the fold. Now, Gallo once again struggling to be able to get on base. Shocker there, but CJ Abrams is one of the better base hitters that you're going to find in all baseball. He's been able to give you nearly a 400 on base, and Jesse Winker has looked really good out of the 3 that I mentioned, but you do have likes of Joey Meneses, Lane Thomas, guys that were able to burst out last season, just not giving you a whole heck of a lot. Meanwhile, for the San Francisco Giants, they spent a lot of money in the offseason to fortify this lineup, and a lot of these pickups just haven't done a whole heck of a lot. Been able to get a bit of power out of Orde Soler, but that said, he's right now only providing about a 314 on base. Jungle Lee, about a 305 on base. Yeah, pickup Matt Chapman, he's hitting below the Mendoza line of 200. They've been able to get a bit more power, but I mean, the guys that are really moving the line right now are the guys that were left over from last year. Wilmer Flores, Lamonte Wade Jr., Patrick Bailey. These guys are relatively solid in their approach at the plate. Michael Conforto has been solid as well, and I do think that the Giants are going to be able to do a better job with their bullpen. You've got Taylor and Tyler Rogers, who have been rock solid. Camilo Duvall, very nice closer for the team. Ryan Walker is able to provide some good innings as well, and this is not the world's worst Washington Nationals bullpen. You've got the likes of a Tanner Rainey, who's looking to be able to get back to where he was a few seasons ago before getting hurt. I do like what you're able to get out of the likes of a Hunter Harvey, Derek Law, Jordan Weems. These are guys that should be able to survive a sub 3.5 ERA, though. Kyle Finnegan, always a little bit of a roll of the dice, but did some I told at 8.8. Fully recognize how pitcher-friendly San Francisco is, but more of a day game there during the daytime. San Francisco plays a little bit more to the hitter, so that's going to be able to help them out. I am going to be taking a look at this total over, and with the Giants, set them on the money line at a minus 183. If you're looking to lay a run and a half, you're finding that anywhere between plus 105 to a plus 110. I need the plus 110 as I set mine more around about a plus 108, plus 109, but at the plus 110 run line, going to be willing to lay it with the Giants to go along with this total over 957, 958 on the betting board. It is the San Diego Padres, and they play us to the Chicago Cubs. The Professor Kyle Hendricks goes for the Cubs. Dylan Cease goes for the San Diego Padres. Padres are between minus 135 to minus 142 favorites. Plus 120 to plus 130 is that number on the Cubs. 8 is the total. Over is minus 115. The under is minus 105. And I set the Padres at a minus 157. I'm going to be willing to lay the number for Cease. He gets a matchup with the other Chicago team, not the one that he used to play for. But I do think that this is going to be a quality start for him as Cease just continues to get strikeouts. 10 and 2/3 innings thus far with the San Diego Padres. 13 strikeouts, a big key for him. Can he limit the walks? That was always the issue that he had with the Chicago White Sox. He was always giving up right around about 4 walks per 9 innings. And Kyle Hendricks is the exact opposite. Not a swing and miss guy. He's very much going to pitch a contact, but doesn't give up a lot of walks. So he's just been banged around in his first 2 starts of the season. 7 2/3 innings, 17 hits, 4 walks allowed. That is not terrific, to say the least. And it's a Cubs bullpen that was able to get a little bit of relief with Ben Brown actually giving you a halfway decent effort yesterday. Daniel Palencia is able to give you a little bit of long relief, but Jose Quas has had a rough start to the season. Like what I've seen out of Adbear Alzale, they pick up Hector Neris in the offseason, but like guys like Luke Little and company can be a bit of a roll of the dice. And for the San Diego Padres, this bullpen does lose Josh Hader from a season ago, but been able to get Aniel De Los Santos, Wandy Peralta come in and be able to hold down the fort, avoid Johnny Brito at all costs. He has been horrible on Tom Grousegrove after he had a great year last year. It looks like he's doing for a little bit of regression, but this Padres lineup still has a lot of really good bats in it. Fernando Tatis Jr., Manny Machado, they are still there for Machado. It's been a rough start to the season for him, but Tatis Jr. entered into yesterday with a 350 on base, 4 home runs. Xander Bogaerts just has not lived up to his contract quite yet with the San Diego Padres, but you know that he's able to get on base. You know that he's able to supply some power, and you've been able to get good production out of Jake Cronenworth, who, after he had a miserable year last year, is hitting darn near a 300. Meanwhile, for the Chicago Cubs, other than Cody Bellinger, you don't necessarily have that star bat, but Guys like C.A. Suzuki, Christopher Morel, Dansby Swanson, Ian Happ, all these guys are very rock solid in their approach at the plate. All those guys I mentioned, at least a 345 on base. I think all of them are going to give you 20 home runs when it's all said and done this season. Nico Horner's had a tough time being able to move the line, but I do think that he's going to be relatively productive here, and I do think that Kyle Hendricks is going to be able to calm down a little bit more in this spot, which is why I did set my total at 7.9. I'm looking at the under, but I do think that Dylan Cease is going to do a nice job of being able to throw this Cubs team for a little bit of a loop, and I do think that this ballpark is going to play very well to how Cease pitches. So I'm looking at the under, set my total at 7.9, and with the San Diego Padres, if you're looking at their run line price, you're able to get that right around about a plus 145 to a plus 150, though. I'd rather play it safe here on the money line, as I do think that this is a lower scoring game. So, going to be looking at that Padres money line and the under 959, 960 on the betting board. The Milwaukee Brewers hit the road face off against the Cincinnati Reds. Yes, we are on to Cincinnati, and they're on Hunter Green getting the start. Meanwhile, Wade Miley hopes to have a party in Milwaukee for the Brewers. Signed as a total, under is minus 115, the over is minus 105, between minus 128 to minus 130. That number on the Reds, plus 117 to plus 120. The number on the Brewers, going to be willing to roll with the Cincinnati Reds here. I did set them as a favorite of minus 148. I just don't know what to expect out of Wade Miley after he got his first few starts of the season skipped by the Milwaukee Brewers. I believe that he was coming off of the injured list. He just had a little bit of a minor ailment. Wasn't anything super duper massive, but for Miley, he was one of the more lucky pitchers in the big leagues last season. 3.14 ERA, but a 4.69 fielding independent. He got less than 6 strikeouts per 9 innings, gave up darn near 3 walks per 9 innings, yet he just got oh so lucky with every home run they gave up seemingly being a solo home run. He was able to just really get fortunate on balls and play in general as well, so I do think that that is going to be coming to a little bit of a screeching halt. And when it comes to backing Hunter Green, you always do have to have the fear in the back of your mind of the home run ball. As for Hunter Green, he does give up a lot of hard contact in general. He's yet to give up a home run this season, but if you take a look at it throughout his career, he has been giving up right around about 1.7 to 1.8 home runs per 9 innings, and does have an ERA throughout his career that is higher at home rather than away from home, which the simple reason why that is because Cincinnati is very much a bandbox of a ballpark, one of the more friendly ballparks to hitters out there in all baseball. But when it comes to this Reds team, you've got the stars starting to be able to develop. Ellie De La Cruz has looked a bit better in this series. He's up to about a 355 on base. Pair of home runs, Will Benson, Spencer Steer. 5 home runs between the two of them, and Steer is giving you very nearly a 489 on base. Certainly, some regression will be coming there, but Jake Fraley, after he was sort of in slash out of the fold, they're starting to give him more at-bats. He's been able to supply a 400 on base, and Stuart Fairchild has been good in the outfield as well. And for the Milwaukee Brewers, we've seen an explosion with their offense. 8-plus runs in each of the last 3 games. I don't think that this has staying power for the Brewers. Perhaps the young guys are a little bit further along than I expected. Jackson Chirillo, he has been tremendous, being able to provide about a 275 average pair of home runs for him. Christian Yelich looks like the Christian Yelich of old. He's been able to supply 4 home runs, absolutely massive, being able to get him back online. You've had Willy Adames do a much better job of getting on base than a season ago. William Contreras, a little bit of a forgotten guy. Pair of home runs, he's been hitting really well as well. For the Brewers, they are going to have the leg up in the bullpen. Joe Piamps, Elvis Piguero, they're very good in the 7th and 8th innings. Ebner Uribe had to be used yesterday, but all in all, like what I'm seeing there. J.B. Wukakis, he's a relatively solid bullpen piece as well. And for the Cincinnati Reds, they are dealing with an injury once again to T.J. Anton. Guy just can't stay healthy, but they pick up Emilio Pagan in the offseason. He, Buck Farmer, Brent Suter. I mean, these guys are solid. They're not great, but they're good enough to be able to bridge things together, get things to Alexis Diaz, who's one of the best closers out there in all of baseball. I do think that the Reds, they are going to be able to get to Wade Miley in this ordeal, and I do think that there's going to be a little bit of hard contact surrendered by Hunter Green, but I think that this Brewers offense just has really gotten on a hot run, and I don't believe that they are as good as they have shown to be thus far this season. And for Wade Miley, advantage for him is that it's still a little bit nippy out there in Cincinnati. If he was pitching in the summer months, I think they would be giving up much more hard contact than he will on this day. So I did set my line at a minus 148. I'm going to be looking at the Reds on the money line. I did set my total at an 8.9, so you're at the 9. I'm looking at the under to go along with the Red Legs. 961, 962 on the betting board is the Atlanta Braves. 8 playoffs to the New York Mets. Jose Quintana is on the bump for the Mets. Alan Wynonis is on the bump for the Bravos and the Braves. Open up at circa at minus 167, plus 148. Your number on the Mets, 9.5 is the total. Unders minus 120. The over is even. If you're looking to lay a run and a half with the Atlanta Braves, you're getting plus 114 there. And for the Braves, I was willing to lay more like minus 105 on that run line. I'm going to be willing to roll with them. For Jose Quintana, he just in this career is a little bit advanced for getting a lot of swings and misses. 8 strikeouts in 10 and a third innings across 2 starts as far as the season last year. Only got about 7 punchouts. For 9 innings has been quite fortunate when guys have gotten on base. He's got a whip that is north of a 1.6, having allowed 6 walks in his 10 and a third innings as well, but has been able to manage his way out of all of those appearances. But that said, I take a look at the Atlanta Braves, and you just have a fearsome Death Star lineup right now that has everyone being able to fire on all cylinders, really, other than the reigning MVP and Ronald Acuna Jr. Still a 380 on base for Acuna, but he has yet to hit his first home run in the season. Meanwhile, it's been Marcell Ozuna who's provided 5 home runs, but Michael Harris, Austin Riley, Ozzy Albies, Matt Olson, all these guys have at least 2 home runs to their name. All these guys are hitting at least a 286. All these guys have at least a 348 on base. That is fearsome, to say the least. You've had Orlando Arcia do a nice job hitting for north of a 360, and then for the New York Mets, they rose up late in the game yesterday to be able to cover that run line. Thoughts and prayers if you had the Atlanta Braves run line yesterday, but that said, you still have to have a lot of questions with regards to bats. I do think that they're going to rise up a little bit. You've got Jeff McNeil, Francisco Lindor, Pete Alonso, DJ Stewart, all hitting below the Mendoza line of 200. That's not going to be the case at the end of the season, though. Alonso up to 3 home runs already. That's been rock solid for the team, but right now they're relying upon Brett Brady along with Francisco Alvarez to be just supplying the boom for the team. That's not necessarily what you want. You've got a bullpen of the Mets that it's not bad, it's not great. You've got Edwin Diaz back, so if you're able to get him the ball, that's very beneficial. But that said, you look at guys like Brooks Raley, Adam Ottavino, Drew Smith, they're not awful, they're not great, they're somewhere in the middle. And for the Atlanta Braves, the bullpen did not come up clutch for them yesterday, and you're probably not going to be seeing some of the guys that blew the game yesterday if you had the run line like Rossy Iglesias. But that said, Pierce Johnson has been relatively solid in a Braves uniform. Has lacked it up a little bit recently, but all in all, I do think that he's going to be relatively good moving forward. You've got Jesse Chavez, who's able to eat multiple innings, and you do have to wonder if Winanes is going to be overly long for this game. He has made 6 career starts, has allowed 5 home runs in 32 and a third innings. Strikeout numbers are there. He was actually relatively solid with regards to command. He was giving up only about 2 walks per 9 innings. He was able to get north of 9 strikeouts for 9 innings. I do think that there's some clear upside with him. I liked what I saw from him at the minor league level, still relatively young at the age of 28. So I do look at this spot, and I do think that the Braves should be able to go out there, dominate this game against the Mets. I did set my total at a 9.8. I think that Winanes gives you a relatively solid start, but I do think that the Braves get to Quintana. So with the 9.5, I like the over. And with the Atlanta Braves getting a plus price on that run line, I'm going to be willing to lay the run and half. 9.63, 9.64 on the betting board. It is the Toronto Blue Jays. They play also the Seattle Mariners. Logan Gilbert goes for Seattle. Yusei Kikuchi is on the bump for Toronto. Toronto between minus 105 to minus 112 favorites. Between even money and plus 108 is that number on Seattle. 8 is the total. Over is minus 115. The under is minus 105. And I did set the Blue Jays as a minus 106 favorite. Right now, we are seeing as low as a minus 105. I wouldn't want to go past minus 105, but on either pick'em line, I'm going to be willing to trust in the Toronto Blue Jays. For Logan Gilbert, he's actually got really good splits on the road. He pretty much records the same ERA, the same home runs per 9 when he is away from home rather than when he is at home. But I do think that the Blue Jays going to continue to wake up with the bats a little bit. They've been able to score 5-plus runs in their last 2 games after scoring 3 or fewer in 7 out of their last 9. And have we been overrating the Blue Jays the last few seasons? Yes, but at the same time, I look at Flagler Jr., Alejandro Kirk, Bo Bichette, Dalton Varsho, and George Springer all hitting at 205 or lower, and certainly that's going to be rising up a little bit. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, as a matter of fact, has been one of your best hitters as he and Justin Turner down for what? Both hitting well above a 300, and the home runs, the overall average, it's going to come for the Toronto Blue Jays. In my opinion, again, are they probably a little bit closer to middle of the road rather than elite on offense? Yes, but at the same time, they're not as bad as they've shown. Meanwhile, for the Seattle Mariners, they're in quite a bit of a funk as well with a lot of their guys. Mitch Garver, Julio Rodriguez, Ore Polanco, J.P. Crawford, all hitting below a 200, throwing their Cal Raleigh as well. It has been rough for them. Ty France and Mitch Haniger are right now carrying the offenses. Haniger has had a pair of home runs. Dom Cazone is not giving you a ton with regards to average, but he's been able to a trio of home runs as well. And then it comes down to the bullpen. As for the Toronto Blue Jays, they are dealing with a few ailments with that bullpen, as they've got Jordan Romano currently out of the fold, Eric Swanson as well. But I like what Tim Hayes is able to bring to the table. He's able to give you about a sub-2.75 ERA at the very least. He did last season. Yimi Garcia has been a little bit of an issue. And Chad Green just has never really been able to recapture that form that he had a few seasons ago with the New York Yankees. So he seems to have stabilized a little bit here in Toronto. Meanwhile, on the flip side for the Seattle Mariners, they've been dealing with a few injuries as well. Matt Brash, he is currently out of the fold. They let go of a few guys like Penn Murphy in the offseason. You just have a factory for producing relief arms for the team, though. Taylor Cicado, Trent Thornton have been really nice finds. Gabe Spire has been solid. They bring in Ryan Stanek in the offseason. Andres Munoz, he's been very good as well. But I do think that for Logan Gilbert, someone who's a pretty steady Eddie guy, he doesn't give out a lot of walks. He gives up 9 strikeouts per 9 innings, but does give up a lot of general just middle contact. Not super duper hard contact, but like doubles contact, I think is the best way of putting it. I do think that he's going to find himself in a little bit of an issue here, and you've got a guy in Yusei Kikuchi who I knew was a fade for a very long time, but it feels like he's just been able to find it a little bit more. He's been able to control the walks in the last 12 months much better than he did towards the early part of his tenure with the Toronto Blue Jays. A little bit concerning that he does give out 5 walks in his first 9 2/3 innings thus far this season, but he was absolutely giving up rockets a few seasons ago. And if you just took a look at him in the second half of last season compared to what he was in the early part of his tenure with the Toronto Blue Jays, I was just seeing a completely different pitcher. After the All-Star break a season ago, he was posting up an ERA that was hovering more in the neighborhood about a 3.39 after that was 4.24 prior to the All-Star break, giving up more like 0.6, 0.7 home runs per 9 innings. So I like what I'm seeing out of Yusei Kikuchi, and it's a Seattle Mariners team that is in a little bit of rough form. So being able to get the minus 105 here, I'm going to be willing to lay that number in. Did set my total at an 8.3. I do think that pair of rough offenses are going to start to get online a little bit more. So I do like the over and the Blue Jays on the money line. 965, 966 on the main board. The LA Angels play OC Tampa Bay Rays. Zach Little is on the bump for the Rays, and Jose Soriano is on the bump for the Angels. Angels are a underdog of anywhere between plus 110 to plus 117. Meanwhile, between minus 120 and minus 130, that number on the Rays line is a total. Under is between minus 110 to a minus 120. The under is any between even a minus 110. And I set Little as a minus 133 favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay with the Tampa Bay Rays. The Angels have actually given you halfway decent effort this far this season. I just wonder how far this top-heavy team is able to go. Mike Trout entered into yesterday with 5 home runs and 6 RBI. Of course, that's a Mike Trout line. And you've got Taylor Ward, who's been able to supply a few home runs as well, so that's been solid. But the likes of Anthony Rendon, Brandon Drury just are not hitting for this team. And I've got massive question marks when it comes to Jose Soriano, who's been utilized throughout his career at the big league level as a reliever. And when it comes to Jose Soriano, he did come up as a little bit more of a starter at the minor league level, but he hasn't done a lot of that within the last, we're going to call it, about 24 or so months. And when Soriano has been up at the big league level, he's been able to give you swings and misses in his time at the big league level. It's not very expansive, but 11 strikeouts per 9 innings, but 5 walks per 9 innings. Could this be AJ Puck 2.0? That's a little bit of a fear that you've got. And if he's not able to lend a whole heck of a lot of length, well, you don't have a lot of great bullpen pieces to be able to rely upon. As well as you've got Matt Moore along Carlos Acevedo. If you're able to get into the 8th and 9th inning, they actually do a relatively solid job. But Adam Simber, he's someone that you've got your massive question marks with. I am not necessarily too bullish on a lot of the other guys that are coming in and sort of like middle relief as well. They've been looking at a lot of like more veteran guys that just wash out, like Hunter Strickland, and it's not a place where you want to be. And for Zach Little, I mean, he has been tremendous as a starter. He was able to take the reins towards back half of the season last year, posted up a sub-3 ERA in that starter's role. He's been really good in terms of command as well. Last year, his walks per 9 rate with the Rays was 1. He doesn't give you a whole lot of swings and misses. With the Rays, he's only been able to give you about 7.6 strikeouts per 9 innings, but does a nice job being able to keep things out in front of them. And I do think that this Rays team going to continue to get a little bit more online with regards to bats. They've had a bit of a tough time of it thus far this season early on. But Andy Diaz, who's right now giving you about a 260 on base, I think that he's going to be able to get into form a little bit more. Isak Paredes has 4 home runs thus far. He's been fine. It's more about being able to get a little bit more out of the likes of the entirety of the catcher spot in general. Randy Arozarena's only giving you about a 285 on base. Power just has not really been there for the Tampa Bay Rays, but have a lot more faith in this line lineup rather than the Angels, who are trotting out their Joe Adell, who's right now setting fire to the rain with a .182 batting average. Do like Logan Ohapi on that side, but I do think that all in all, Rays do find a way to be able to get the job done. I do think that they're going to be able to get some good contact off of Jose Soriano. So here at the 9, I'm going to be looking at the over set by total 9.2, and I do think that the Angels are going to be able to do an okay job of getting to Little as well, but the Rays, they just have such a better bullpen. Pete Fairbanks, Colin Boucher, Jason Adams, all these guys are very rock solid, and I do think that even a guy like Garrett Clevenger is going to be able to lend some good length in this one if needed as well. So did set my total 9.2. I like the over, and with the Rays, going to be willing to lay up to a -132 on that money line. 967, 968 on the betting board. The Chicago White Sox are going to be on the road facing off against the Cleveland Guardians. Tanner Bibee goes for the Guardians. Eric Fetty Wap is on the bump for the White Sox. White Sox are sizable underdogs between +$2 and +214. Meanwhile, anywhere between -238 to -250, that number on the Guardians. 8-8.5 is the total. On the 8, over is -115. The under is -105. On the 8.5, over and under, anywhere between -105 to a -115. And I'm going to rock with the White Sox here. I was willing to take a +172 or higher. I'm actually very high on Eric Fetty. I'm very low on the rest of the Chicago White Sox, not named Garrett Crochet, but you know what? For Eric Fetty, he looked really good in the KBO last year, posting up a 2 ERA. His strikeout numbers are up. His walks are down. He looks like a rock-solid pitcher. In 2 starts, he did give up 2 home runs, but just 3 runs in total, 11 strikeouts, 3 walks. It really looks like he found something out at the KBO level, and the White Sox lost both of his starts by 1 run because even though he went out there, gave them a chance to win, the entire White Sox lineup just has not been able to do a lot, and this is a White Sox team that's just very rough in general. Yoel Moncada's now dealing with an injury. Eloy Jimenez, Luis Robert have landed on the injured list, and they could not afford to have these guys go on the injured list. Right now, you're staring at Paul DeJong as right now you're probably your best power bat. He's got a pair of home runs this far this season. And what in the heck is Andrew Benintendi doing? He's hitting like a .167. Nobody on this White Sox team knows how to take a base. Like, seriously, everyone's up there swinging as if every single pitch is called a strike, and that's not the case. If it's off the plate, you don't need to swing. They need to get that concept just locked into their skulls. You pick up Martin Maldonado, is literally hitting below 100. Like, we talk about the Mendoza line of 200. Is that like the double down Mendoza line? I am not sure, but you've got a Cleveland Guardians team that as well is not going to be hitting for a ton of power. Jose Ramirez, he's been pretty rock solid in the way that he's able to move the line, has been able to give you a pair of home runs thus far this season, but this is a bunch as well that I believe that they currently have a grand total of 8 home runs over the course of their first 11 games. Stephen Kwan is giving you nearly a 4-arm base. Andrés Giménez, north of a 4-arm base. You've been able to get some good production out of some of the younger guys as well. Will Brandon has a nice approach at the plate. He's not going to give you any sort of home runs, but he's able to get on. Brian Rocchio, and once again, not a lot of power, but is able to move the line as well. For the Cleveland Guardians, they certainly do have a leg up with regards to the bullpen. I like him. Emmanuel Clase at that closer spot. Hunter Gaddis had a nice second stanza at the big league level as a reliever. Peter Strzelecki picking him up from the Milwaukee Brewers. I thought that was a relatively solid move as well. And then you got a starter in Tanner Bibee. I mean, he's solid. He's not great. He's not like super duper amazing, but he's going to be able to hold down the four for you for Bibee since he got called up to the big league level a season ago. He's been posting up about a 3.03 ERA. I do think that there's a little bit of regression coming from as his fielding independent more around about a 3.53, but gives you 9 strikeouts and 3 walks per 9 innings, mitigates hard contact, especially when he's in his home ballpark as well. So I do think that this is going to be a bit of a lower scoring game. I did set my total, and at 7.8, you've got a White Sox team that's really dealing with the injuries, and especially at the 8.5s here. I do like this little under for the White Sox. They were able to rough for a few runs yesterday. I don't think that Lightning is going to be striking twice, so do like the under, but with the White Sox being able to get north of +170 with Fetty on the mound, I'm going to be taking that big money line to go along with this total under. 969, 970 on the betting board. It's the Boston Red Sox playing against the Baltimore Orioles. Cole Irvin goes for the Orioles, and Cutter Crawford is on the bump for Boston. Boston is between a -114 to a -118 favorite, +104 to a +108. That number on Baltimore, and total on this game, it is 8.5 to 9. On the 8.5, over is -120. The under is even on the 9. Over and under are both at -110. So by total 9.4, I'm going to be looking at the over. Big thing in this one is that Cutter Crawford has not been the same pitcher throughout his career in Boston rather than on the road. As a matter of fact, for Cutter Crawford last season, he posted up a sub-3 ERA away from home and a 6 ERA at home. I do think that he should be able to work on those home and road splits a little bit, but that shows how ruthless and relentless this Boston ballpark can be to pitchers. And you got a guy in Cole Irvin that just isn't in good form in general. For Cole Irvin, he's never been the world's greatest swing and miss guy. He's been able to get a few more punch-outs since joining the Baltimore Orioles, but that said, for Cole Irvin, I just don't see him being a guy that can really be too reliable. Since joining the Baltimore Orioles last season, as north of a 4-5 ERA, he has been also giving up a little bit more just hard contact in general. Since the acquisition by the Baltimore Orioles last season, he was giving up in that neighborhood of about 1.3 home runs per nine innings, and being a pitcher contact guy, I don't think that Boston is going to be treating him very well. Tyler O'Neill has been amazing for this Boston Red Sox team. He's got 6 home runs already this season. I believe that that leads the big leagues, and while Rafael Devers is in a little bit of a funk, hitting just .195 with 2 home runs, he's been able to do a nice job holding down the fort, while Jaron Duran, along with O'Neill, have been your main on-base guys. Both of these guys hitting north of a .300. You need Masataka Yoshida to be a little bit more consistent, hitting just .225. Tristan Casas, he's starting to pick it up after he had a slow first few starts of the season. Meanwhile, for the Baltimore Orioles, this is a nice lineup, just really 1-9. You've got one really nice power bat that I like in Anthony Santander that had north of 25 home runs last season, but have a bunch of guys like Gunnar Henderson, Adley Rutschman, Ryan Mountcastle that I think that they're going to be in that pocket about 20 or so home runs. Mountcastle has the ability to perhaps go off for 30, but I don't know if he's going to do so this season, but has been able to do a nice job moving the line. He and Rutschman hitting both above a .275, but you do have guys like Jordan Westberg, Cedric Mullins, Austin the Say's kid, Roman Urias, who are hitting below the Mendoza line of .200. They're going to need to pick it up a little bit, and for the Baltimore Orioles, they currently employ Craig Kimbrell in that bullpen. That is not something that you want. You've got Danny Colomb, Yennier Cano, Jacob Webb, even Dylan Tate coming back from missing all of last season. All these guys in their most recent season had a .35 ERA, and for the Boston Red Sox, they did let go of John Schreiber in the offseason, so Josh Winkowski is going to need to be a big part of this bullpen. I think that he can be. I've actually really liked what I've seen as well out of young Justin Slayton. He's come in 4 relief appearances, and he's looked relatively rock solid in all of them. They pick up Isaiah Campbell, who was over with the Seattle Mariners 8 seasons ago, but I do think that Crawford is going to look a little bit better in this start than he has throughout his career in Boston. It's a little bit chillier outside, so that means that balls that might be flying out during the summertime might be knocked down in these sort of environment. But that said, I did set my total at 9.4. I do like the over. I think that both pitchers give up some runs, but I do think that in the end, Red Sox find a way to be able to get the job done. I like the Red Sox on the money line, set them at a -132, and I'm looking at the over as well. 971, 972 on the betting board. The Houston Astros hit the road face off against Kansas City Royals. Seth Lugo goes for the Royals. Spencer Arrigetti is going to be on the bump for the Astros, and the Astros open up in a lot of spots at a -135. This has now been adjusted to between -114 to -120. Even money to +105 is that number on Kansas City. 9 is the total. Under is -115. The over is -105 due to a pitching change because the Astros, it looked like they were going to be throwing Hunter Brown a lot of places. They have yet to put up a number on this game. So we're seeing initial openers here, but as long as we are getting these 9s, I am going to be taking a look at the over. I set my total at 9.3, and for Arrigetti, I could only set them at a -109. So if we could get north of a +110, I'd be willing to fire in on the Royals. If this gets down to more like a -108, -107, that's a scenario where I'm going to be looking at the Astros. So right now it is a little bit of a wait and see for me, but with Arrigetti, who's a 6th round draft pick out of Louisiana, the old Raging Cajuns, and do I have my question marks with him? He's got some solid swing and miss stuff, but it's not necessarily great swing and miss stuff. When he had his appearances for the Astros in spring training, he only got 5 total innings, so it's a really small sample size. He did give up 4 runs in those 5 innings, so in the small sample size, he didn't necessarily dazzle. And if you take a look at what he did at the minor league level a season ago, between his time with the Sugar Land Space Cowboys along Corpus Christi, he's posting up about a .440 ERA. He did a good job of being able to mitigate hard contact, but the walks are an issue. North of 4 walks per 9 innings, heck, with the Space Cowboys this season. He has already given out 7 walks in 8 1/3 innings, and that's going to be an issue. And I do think that the Astros are going to need to hold down the fort quite a bit in terms of their bullpen, because I don't think that they're going to be able to get a ton of length out of him. Josh Hader along Ryan Presley in the 8th and 9th inning, they've had their issues, but I think that they're going to be rock solid. But Parker Molchanski, he's someone that you look at as perhaps a little bit of a long guy. He has not been horrendous this season. Wouldn't be surprised if we see quite a bit of Brandon Beelock as well. He's someone that they typically try to utilize for multiple innings as well, but they've been using him in quite a few games as well. Brian Abreu is someone that's able to give you a sub-3 ERA as well, but Even with that, this is a Royals bullpen that is royally awful. James MacArthur is being thrown in big-time situations. That's not what you want. Will Smith gets way too jiggy with it. Nick Anderson is rough. Jordan Lyles. I mean, the fact that he's been relegated to the bullpen, it's just sad to watch. And for the Royals, this is a nice, young, up-and-coming roster in terms of being able to put bat to ball. MJ Melendez has 3 home runs over the last 7 days. Bobby Witt Jr. has been one of the best hitters in all of baseball thus far. He and Melendez both are giving you north of 375 on base. Pair of bombs for Witt Jr. thus far this season. Mikel Garcia has been able to give you 3 home runs. You need a little bit more out of guys like Hunter Renfroe, Kyle Isbell, the outfield in general. Sainz Melendez has been a little bit touch and go, but Salvador Perez, he looks like the Salvador Perez of old. Pair of home runs hitting above 300 for the Houston Astros. They've been able to get their act together a little bit more at the plate. Yordan Alvarez has already been able to provide you with a quartet of home runs. They did leave 13 men on base yesterday, and Alex Bregman, he's having a typical Alex Bregman start, hitting below a 225. Jose Abreu has been just miserable at the plate along with Mauricio Dubon, but I said Jose Altuve, Yordan Alvarez at the top, both hitting above a 300. Yennier Diaz hitting for a 300. Doesn't necessarily draw a lot of walks, but he gives you some good contact as well. I do think that you're going to be able to get quite a few runs up on the board. This despite the fact that I actually do like Seth Lugo as a starter. Like in a normal circumstance with the Royals, they'd be a much bigger underdog on my handicap rather than a plus 109. But Seth Lugo only gave out about 2 walks per 9 innings last season while he's with the San Diego Padres. So far, so good in his time with the Royals. He has yet to give up a home run in his first 2 starts, provided good length with 12 2/3 innings. His walks per 9 rate, pretty much what it was at San Diego last season, at right around about a 2. Not going to give you tremendous swings and misses, and his first 2 starts were against the Twins and the White Sox, so I take that with a little bit of a grain of salt, but I don't know. Like what I'm seeing there, I do think that you're going to see quite a few runs in this game, though, because the Royals still have the Royals bullpen, so looking at the over, and with the Royals, willing to take plus 110 or higher with them, minus 108 or less, that'll be my buy point on Houston. 973, 974 on the betting board. The Oakland Triple A's are going to be in the road. They're going to be facing off against the Walker Texas Rangers as Cody Bradford is on the bump for the Rangers. Ross Stripling goes for Oakland. Oakland is anywhere between plus 154 to plus 168. Meanwhile, if you're looking at Texas, they're back to me in a big favorite. Anywhere between minus 180 to minus 190. If you're looking at that run line, by the way, you're going to be getting plus 110 to plus 112. Meanwhile, total on this game is 9. The over is minus 120 and the under is even money. And for the Rangers, I was needing at least a plus 108 to be able to take a shot on that run line. Seeing that at plus 110 to a plus 112, I recognize that the Oakland A's are 7-1 on the run line in their last 8 games. I am a schmuck. I am going to lay the run F with the Texas Rangers, and this is less of a fade of the Oakland A's and more of a, I am actually bullish on Cody Bradford. He got a little bit unlucky last year, and this year he's really been able to put it together as a pitcher. Looked relatively solid in his last start against the Houston Astros. He's made 2 starts thus far this season, did allow a home run in start number 1, but all in all, 12 2/3 innings, giving up 3 runs. Strikeout numbers are solid. Last year he had a 5.30 ERA, but a 4.68 fielding independent, and right now he's got a sub-3 fielding independent. He's done a nice job of not giving up a lot of walks, and last year he only gave up about 2 walks per 9 innings. He goes up against someone in Ross Stripling that is never going to be fooling you for some guy that is giving you a whole bunch of whiffs or anything like that. Ross Stripling last season with the San Francisco Giants punched out right around 7 guys per 9 innings, had a 5.36 ERA, 5.21 fielding independent. So got your question marks there. Thus far this season, he's been able to do a relatively solid job of being able to mitigate hard contact, but I do think that he's going to be a candidate for one of those guys that when he's in Oakland is able to do a nice job, and then on the road, not so much, because he is very much a pitch of contact guy that throughout his career has given up quite a bit of hard contact for his career, right around about 1.4 home runs per 9 innings. And for Oakland, this is still not necessarily the world's greatest lineup. They have been able to put up 4 runs to their credit in 5 out of their last 6 games, but you look at J.J. Blade, Zach Loft, they both been able to provide right around about a 325 on base, and Shea Langeliers from out of nowhere has had 4 home runs this far this season. He had a few bombs a season ago, but I think he had a 3 home run game yesterday against Texas in a game where the A's scored 4 runs in total, so I don't know if that's sustainable. Brent Rooker has been off to a rough start to the season, only about a 225 on base there, so it's been interesting. And Esteri Ruiz, one of the best base dealers in all of baseball, got optioned down to AAA. That's just a clear sign of tanking right there. Meanwhile, for the old Walker Texas Rangers, this is a very fierce lineup, 1-9. Wyatt Langford has yet to be able to find that first home run, but he's doing a solid job moving the line. Marcus Semien, Adolis Garcia, these 2 guys, you know that their power numbers are going to be there. Semien, 4 on base. Adolis Garcia is not hitting really for average, but he's provided 4 home runs this far this season. Jared Walsh, Corey Seager, Josh Smith, these guys are running above a 300 as well. like what I'm seeing there. And for the Texas Rangers, it's a bullpen that is much improved from last season. Jose Leclerc had a little bit of a rough go of it yesterday, but you bring in David Robertson, you bring in Kirby Yates, that fortifies a bullpen that was dealing with Chris Trent, Will Smith a season ago. Brock and Roll Burke, I think, is going to be relatively solid. And for the Oakland A's, Danny Menace is something I do like in the bullpen, and the bullpen isn't the world's worst. Lucas Hersage, I think, has a little bit of upside. He was a flameout with the Brewers in their farm system as an infielder. He's been able to have a second stanza as a pitcher that has gone quite well. Why they've got Mason Miller in the bullpen, I've got no idea, but he's a good long guy. But I look at Cody Bradford, and I do think that he's going to be able to turn a nice start. I do think that there's going to be a little bit of regression here. And for the Oakland A's, they've been able to get a little bit hot with their bats currently. I did set my total at 9.1, so here at the 9, I'm looking at the over. But I do think that Texas is going to be able to get to Ross Stripling. I do think that they're going to provide a lot more offense than they did a day ago. So it's a spot where I do like the Rangers on the run line, and I'm going to be taking a look at the sign over. 975, 976 on the betting board. The Minnesota Twins plus the LA Dodgers. Bobby Miller goes for the Dodgers. Chris Paddock is on the bump for Minnesota. Minnesota, 9 is the total, under is minus 120, the over is even, and with the LA Dodgers, they're between minus 175 to minus 180 favorites. Meanwhile, between plus 160 and plus 162, seeing a straight plus 150, that is your number on Minnesota. Was willing to take a plus 157 or higher with Minnesota. I'm going to be willing to take this plus number with Bobby Miller. Very good in terms of being able to give you some swings and misses, and was really able to burst onto the scene a season ago. That said, I feel like this is a little bit too much love, a little bit too soon for Bobby Miller, who I think that eventually he's going to be a Cy Young candidate. I do think that he is going to be one of those aces for the LA Dodgers for a very long time to come, but it does have me a little bit concerned that he goes out in his last start and he puts up a turd essentially against the Chicago Cubs. He got five outs and he gave up five runs, all of which were earned. That was not tremendous, to say the least. Not a bad guy in terms of command as well last year. About 2.3 walks per nine innings, and actually put up a better ERA when he was on the road rather than at home, right around about a 4.5 ERA at home, closer to about a 3.05 when he was away from home. But I do feel a little bit bullish about Chris Paddock as well. A lot of people forget when he came up in like 2019, this guy was a bee's knees. We all thought that Chris Paddock was going to be this next great pitcher. He's dealt with a lot of injuries, and just in general, San Diego was not necessarily the landing spot for him. He's only made now, I believe, 9 total appearances with the Minnesota Twins, but I do think that there's upside there. Has always been solid in terms of the swing and miss stuff. You go back to his rookie year, he was getting nearly 10 punch-outs per 9 innings, and has always been pretty good with regards to command as well. For his career, less than 2.5 walks per 9 innings. His stuff looked relatively solid in his first start out, gave up 2 runs over the course of 4 innings, and he's backed up by a pretty rock-solid and steady bullpen. Jay Jackson, Jorge Alcala, Cody Funderburk, these guys are all good. Now, they're dealing with Mr. Duran being currently out of the fold. Their main closer is out. That is not great, to say the least. And for them, they pick up Michael Tonkin after he just was not a fit with the Minnesota Twins. But I think that this is actually a really nice upside play. I take a look at what he did with the Atlanta Braves last season. Was a nice long guy that provided about a 4.3 ERA. Began his career with the Minnesota Twins many, many years ago, actually. And I do think that that's going to be nice for him. And then you take a look at the LA Dodgers and their bullpen. Still one of the best in the big leagues, but they did lose Caleb Ferguson, Victor Gonzalez from a season ago. So now they're kicking the tires on Connor Brogdon, who gave up a few home runs yesterday. Ryan Brazier as a Dodger has a sub-275 ERA. I don't trust in Joe Kelly at all, but Evan Phillips is really good in the back half of games as well. And as we know with the LA Dodgers, this is one of the just best offenses that you're going to find in all of baseball. Mookie Betts has already blasted 5 bombs this season. Shohei Ohtani, after a rough like 3 games or something like that, he's up to 3 home runs. He's up to a 370 on base. He's just fine. Teoscar Hernandez, 345 on base, 4 home runs. James Altman, he's been a little bit all or nothing this season, but now he's getting hot. Pair of home runs in the last 3 games. Max Muncy is doing a better job of moving the line this year. And Will Smith, he's really getting jiggy with it with about a 400 average. And the key for the Twins, can they just find a little bit of offense? Because Carlos Correa is starting to look much better than he did a season ago. He's back up to hitting a 300, but Royce Lewis being out of the fold, that's been rough for the team, to say the least. And for the Minnesota Twins, they were able to hit 3 home runs in the final 2 innings of the game yesterday. That was as many home runs as they had the entire season up until that point. So can they be able to flip the switch here a little bit, be able to ride a little bit more offense? Because like stuff, Carlos Santana, Willie Castro, Edward Julian, Ryan Jeffers, Matt Wallner, Max Kepler, Christian Vasquez, they are all hitting below a .175. It is awful. Manuel Margot has been able to give you a relatively good plate approach as well. It's been a little bit in and out of the fold, and Byron Buxton, he's out there on the field, which is good news. Bad news is he's got 0 home runs and is providing a .300 on base. But I do think that for this Twins team, I feel like they found found a little bit of something towards back half of the game yesterday. I did set my total, though, at an 8.8. I think that Bobby Miller is going to give you a much better start than he did a few days ago in Chicago. And I like the upside of Chris Paddock. So I'm liking the under and being able to get the Minnesota Twins at north of a plus 158. I'm going to be looking at them on the money line and wrap things up with my DK Network right up pick. 977, 978 on the bang board. It is the Miami Marlins on the road facing off against the New York Yankees. Marcus Stroman goes for the Yankees. Ryan Weathers is on the bump for Miami, and Miami is a sizable underdog between plus 180 to plus 190. Meanwhile, between minus 210 to minus 225, that number on the Yankees. 8.5 is the total, over is minus 115, the under is minus 105. Gonna do something that I very rarely do. Right now, we're seeing that Yankees run line at a minus 105 to lay a run and a half. I typically don't do this a lot with regards to write-ups, but this is something that just really stood out to me. I'd be willing to lay up to about a minus 122 on this run line of the Yankees. My write-up is going to be laying the run and a half on the run line. I know that there are many people that are uneasy about laying a run and a half, especially with a home team. I'm going to be willing to do it here. I'm just that out on the Miami Marlins at this point. By the way, I still can't believe Ryan Weathers is only 24 years old. This is year number 4 in the league for him. He has been awful. For Ryan Weathers, 5.78 career ERA, 5.60 fielding independent, 1.8 home runs surrendered per 9 innings. He's a pitch-to-contact guy that gives up 3.7 walks per 9 innings. Not great. Not great at all. And those numbers came pitching in San Diego, where it's very pitcher-friendly. You've got a New York Yankees team that is completely revamped with a lineup, 25th in the league last year in terms of runs per game. They've been able to get quite a bit out of Anthony Volpe along with Juan Soto. Both of these guys are giving you north of a four-arm base. And the Yankees' success thus far this season has come with Aaron Judge really being pedestrian. I mean, Aaron Judge has a pair of home runs. He's hitting a .195. The on-base percentage is still .382, but we expect more from him. Moving forward, Gleyber Torres hasn't been able to give you a whole heck of a lot of anything. Anthony Rizzo, one home run, about a .345 on base. You expect a little bit more there, and yet the Yankees have been able to go out there and dominate. They did use up Ian Hamilton in the bullpen yesterday, but a lot of their more trustworthy pieces, they're going to be good to go. They did use Clay Holmes yesterday as well, but only for 7 pitches. Caleb Ferguson is someone that I like that they picked up in the offseason. They've got Victor Gonzalez as well. This is one of the better bullpens out there in the big leagues, and for Miami entering into the series, and they're going to need to use a lot of it. Bullpen, north of a 5-5 in terms of the ERA. They let go of Steven Okert. AJ Puck, who is so great in the bullpen, well, he started yesterday, so now you're looking at Birch Smith and Sixto Sanchez coming out of the bullpen, and Sanchez was very good as a starter in 2020. Clearly not a good bullpen piece. George Soriano is actually someone that I do like, but for Miami as well. They return one guy that had north of 20 home runs from a season ago, and that would be our good friend, Mr. Jake Berger. Very, very yummy hitter who's been able to do a relatively solid job this year. A pair of home runs, only about a 300 or so on base, but you know what? He's been able to drive in quite a few runs because, well, nobody else is for the Miami Marlins. You've been able to have Nick Flash Gordon, Jed Chisholm be able to give you a pair of home runs. Brian De La Cruz, he's only giving you about a 290 on base. And Luis Arraez, after he was so good at getting on base last season, 234 average. Just not great, to say the least. I do think that Marcus Stroman is going to be able to tap into the Marcus Stroman that we saw prior to the All-Star break last season. First 19 starts of the season prior to the All-Star break, he was posting up a sub-3 ERA. Now, granted, that came with a fielding independent that was much above a 3. He wasn't necessarily getting a ton of swings and misses, but was doing a good job mitigating hard contact. It feels like he's just rejuvenated in general. Second half of the season last year, he was banged up. It just went completely down the toilet bowl for him. It feels like going back to New York, as he's a New York guy, it is going to be really able to fire him up against a Miami Marlins team that right now, with them dealing with 3 injuries to their starters, it's really caused the pieces on the ship to be all sorts of moved around, all sorts of funky, and they just have not been able to find it in general. I do think that the New York Yankees continue the demise of the Miami Marlins. Being able to get this run line at right around minus 105, I'm going to be willing to lay the run and a half. In terms of the total, I did set it at an 8.7. The Miami Marlins have actually been quite good to the over thus far this season because they are giving up so many stinking runs, so I do like the over, and I like playing the run and a half with New York, and that is going to be my write-up, playing the run and a half with the New York Yankees, and that'll wrap things up for the Wednesday edition of the Baseball Betting Show, now part of the Beeson Family Podcast. If you do like sharing from this fine podcast, the Baseball Betting Show, you're able to subscribe wherever your podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you have a question, comment, segment, idea, what have you for this podcast, you have one or two ways to be able to throw those in. First one is my Twitter / X timeline, at GNNR41. Keep in mind the letters EM, they mean does not matter, so as per usual, please do send these into the timeline. The other way is via an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to fire whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via the that 5-star review, and a big thanks to Justin Perry, who does great work over at Shot Quality Bets, along with Pitcher List and The Justin Perry Show, for joining me in the last segment, coming at you guys every single day throughout the baseball season. That means I'm coming at you once again. Thank you so much for tuning in.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts. If you dare.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.